You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we get a look at the life and times of one of today's most popular founding fathers. First, a look back at an issue that got some attention in the earlier days of the presidential race and has frequently come up during the Obama presidency, family leave. It's been a hot topic in the United States. Only about 12% of private sector employees here are offered paid family leave through their employer. It's a stark contrast from the around 180 other nations that require paid family leave. Bridget Schulte is director of the Better Life Lab at New America and author of the book Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. She co-wrote an opinion piece with Anne-Marie Slaughter for the Washington Post on three things that modern family leave policy in America needs, and it's posted right now on the Central Time Facebook page. Bridget, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start out by getting our terminology straight. What is family leave? What does it cover?
Well, paid family leave, I think this is what's really important. People tend to think that it's for new parents or adoptive parents. And while that is true, it's really for all of us. If you get sick, and you need some time to recover, that's covered by paid family leave. If you have elderly parents who need time and attention, if you have to take your mother to the doctor, or maybe your father has Alzheimer's and is in another state and you need time to, go and care for him, paid family leave or family leave. Right now we don't have paid family leave. Family leave covers all of those instances.
Give us the big picture on family leave with the United States. Where do we stand when you look at the rest of the world?
Well, we don't start off with laughing. Yeah, because we're not standing. We're not even laying down. We're at the bottom of the barrel. The World Bank, they just came out with a report not long ago of a survey of 171 countries around the world, more than 171 countries, and there are only four in the entire world that they surveyed that have no paid family leave policy, and that includes Tonga, Suriname, Papua New Guinea, and the United States. So we are really, really out of step with the rest of the world, not just advanced economies, but developing economies. I mean, everybody else has some form of paid family leave except us. What we do have is an unpaid family leave structure. It's the Federal Family Medical Leave Act, and it gives employees about 12 weeks of unpaid leave every year to do the same things, to care for yourself, to care for a newborn, adoptive, or foster child, to care for your elderly parents or a sick relative. But the thing about that is that it applies to a certain group of workers. You have to work for a big company with more than 50 employees. You have to have been there for over a year. You have to have been working full-time. So this doesn't cover part-time workers. It doesn't cover anybody who works at a small company. So that, so basically 40% of all workers in the United States have no access to this unpaid leave at all.
Bridget, what's your sense about why the U.S. has lagged so far behind pretty much the rest of the world?
You know, it's a really good question, and it's one that I was on a panel recently, and I posed it to other panel members, and people are pretty stumped. They're like, the former director of the former head of the Ford Foundation said he can only chalk it up to something that he called abject cruelty. It is really strange when you think about it, but honestly, a lot of it goes back to our philosophy. Here in the United States, we have there's a real divide. Certainly, we're seeing it now in this political season. There's a divide about what we think the proper role of government is, what we think is good for families. We tend to think that families are an individual responsibility, a personal, kind of a private choice. And while that's all very true, there is also an aspect of investing in the next generation and in the future. And that's why we do invest in public schools in K-12, why we do have things like student loans. It's why we have certain social programs like Social Security that was initially intended to make sure that nobody would starve and die on a park bench just because they got old and couldn't work anymore. So we have at times in our history come together and said, you know, we need to help each other. We need to think of ourselves as a community, and together we can be stronger. And yet this is a lot of the, you know, paid family leave got all caught up in sort of culture wars, if you will, about sort of what the proper role of a mother should be, and a lot of squeamishness about working mothers and discomfort about that. And it's unfortunate we've never really solved the cultural piece that would really go a long way to helping a lot of families out there. I mean, the majority of children today are raised by either two parents who work or a single parent. So what we're holding on to, this notion that mom stays home, you know, it's just not reality for people anymore.
We're talking about the prospect of paid family leave right now with Bridget Schulte, director of the Better Life Lab at New America, and she's also the author of the book Overwhelmed Love or Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. And Bridget, you take an optimistic view of this. You're saying, well, the good news is here is that United States can learn from the rest of the world, learn what works best and put it into practice. And you even say that it may be that paid family leave is inevitable. Why do you think that?
Well, there's really some interesting things that have been happening, really just in the last year or two. When I wrote the book, there really wasn't a whole lot of movement, but the Obama administration, certainly the Department of Labor, has made paid family leave a big issue, and they've had a number of hearings and events around the country. President Obama has mentioned it in State of the Union speeches. In the most recent presidential election, you had both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton talking about paid family leave on the Democratic side. You also had Marco Rubio on the conservative Republican side talking about paid family leave and how important it was to support families, to make sure that they had time to bond, to care, and particularly when children were young. That there's a host of research out there about how this is good for families, it's good for children, for health, for child development. It's also actually good for businesses. It increases loyalty. There's reduced turnover and tension. So it's actually good for the economy as well. There's really good research now that's coming out because everybody else has this paid leave policy so we can study it. But there are also four different states in the United States that have their own state paid family leave systems. And so we've been able to study them. California is the oldest, passed in 2002. New York is the most recent, passed just in the last couple months. And what's interesting is that each leave program sort of learns and kind of leapfrogs on the past. And so that's my contention in writing this piece, is that we have really an opportunity. There is sort of this growing momentum or traction, if you will, from both the right and the left, understanding that we really are out of step with the world. And it's time to find our own system that works for the United States and our political and economic system, and really supports our families. You know, if we say that we're a family, you know, a nation of family values, how do we do that? And you know, what does that mean? So there is this growing traction, and that's where it's sort of an exciting time. We really can learn from what other countries have done and the mistakes that they've made and had to correct. That we can kind of learn from that and build something that is uniquely American, but also you know, a really good system from the start.
Bridget, you mentioned some of the benefits there, the benefits in health for children, business benefits, economic benefits. Dig into that a little more and tell us what some of the big reasoning is here for having family leave, that it's not just good for families, it's good overall.
Right. It's not just a nice to have. I mean, the first piece is obviously to look at the changing demographics and just the sheer need that's out there. That you really, you know, family dynamics have changed. And, you know, when people say why, you know, and why can't one parent stay home, all you have to do is look at sort of two things. And one is productivity. Worker productivity has continued to climb since the end of the Second World War. And the other piece you have to look at is what's happened to wages. And wages have started to stagnate for families in about, you know, the 1970s and 80s. And that really pushed a lot of women into the workplace. You know, then you needed to have two parents or two workers to maintain the same standard of living that you'd had before. before. So I think that's what people have to understand, that there are larger forces behind a lot of this, that certainly the women's movement opened up opportunities for women, but there have been structural and economic changes as well. So families all up and down the socioeconomic spectrum kind of don't have a choice if you want to have a middle-class standard of living. So what we've learned, though, from other countries around the world, what we've learned from the states here, is that paid family leave has some very concrete benefits. There have been ties to increased student performance in schools, higher graduation rates from high school, decreased infant mortality rates, decreased maternal illness or death, which is important, increases in well baby visits, vaccinations, increases in breastfeeding, which has been tied to all sorts of benefits for the child, from strengthening the immune system. In California, the study showed that women with paid family leave actually breastfed at twice the rate as those that didn't have it or didn't take it. There's been a decrease in depressive symptoms for mothers. And as far as the economy goes, another study in California found, when they surveyed all the companies, and this is really important because local chambers of commerce were very opposed to it. They were very afraid. Businesses thought this would be a job killer. But the research showed that when they surveyed the companies, more than 90% said that having paid family leave had either a neutral or positive effect on employee morale, on productivity, and on their own bottom line. So that's pretty powerful evidence out there that this is actually not a nice to have, but an investment not only in human capital, but also in our own communities and economy.
Bridget Schulte is with us now. She's the director of the Better Life Lab at New America and the author of the book Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. And we're talking about an article that she co-wrote with Anne-Marie Slaughter on what a modern family leave policy in America needs and could look like. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or posting on the Central Time Facebook page. Do you feel like your employer offers enough family leave? Do you think paid family leave should be mandated? Or should employers have the option whether to offer it or not? If you're a parent or a caregiver, did you have what you needed when you needed it? Call 800-642-1234. We'll pick up our conversation after a short break. You're with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're picking up our conversation with Bridget Schulte about an opinion piece that she co-wrote for The Washington Post on what a modern American family leave policy should look like. And you can join us by calling 800-642-1234 or posting on the Central Time Facebook page. You can tell us if your employer accommodates some of your family obligations, things like caring for older parents or for sick children, and of course, the birth of a child. You can call at 800-642-1234. Do you see a difference between how men and women, or maybe how high or low income jobs offer leave, and what would you like to see in a national family policy? You can call us at 800-642-1234. And Bridget, one of the points you make in your piece is that an effective family leave policy, as you see it, would be one that applies equally to men and women. Tell us about that lesson from looking at the rest of the world.
Yeah, this is a really important lesson. You know, we often talk about maternity leave and how we need to support mothers, and mothers need paid maternity leave, and that's absolutely true. But when you look around the world, many countries actually began, different countries sort of instituted these policies for different reasons. And it's interesting, in Europe, in France and Germany, for instance, they lost so many people during two devastating world wars, they passed these policies early on to try to encourage people to have more children to replace their population. And so they thought, well, we need to make it easy for women to combine work and family. So we're going to give women long maternity leaves. In the Nordic countries, they didn't want to have more immigration. They wanted to then put mothers to work. And so they passed these policies again, thinking we'll make it easier for women to combine work and family. We'll give women these long leaves. But over time, over decades, what that really showed is that women did get these long leaves, men didn't get any leaves, but then the businesses didn't want to hire women because they didn't want to hire somebody or retain or promote them who was going to be gone for a year or sometimes three. Some countries let women go take maternity leave for 3 years. And so what you ended up with, say in Sweden, we often like to think of Sweden as this place of great gender equality, but really there are more women in the private sector in the United States, even with our really no family policies, supporting women. We have more women in positions, management positions, even though there are very few here in the United States. In Sweden, most of the women work in the public sector. Many of them work part-time. And so there is a what they call occupational segregation, largely because of these leaves. And so what's happened is a number of countries then wanted to try to change that and thought, okay, well, how do we try to figure out, not to have just women combine in work and life, but not kind of tie them to traditional gender roles, because these long maternity leaves just reinforce the notion moms are the ones that take care of kids. Moms should be in charge of everything. And so they've done some really interesting things where they have made it more of a norm for men to begin taking parental leave. And what they're finding is fascinating in studies done in Quebec and in Iceland, when they made it sort of not only normal, but kind of created this nudge for men to take leave, kind of creating a use it or lose it daddy quota, more men took it. Say in Norway, when they created a daddy quota, men taking parental leave moved from 2% up to over 90%. And so now you've got, I was talking to a young father from Norway. He said, yeah, now people call each other up. It's like, hey, is your wife expecting? Let's take our, daddy leave together. It's become part of their culture. But what's fascinating is that when you look at child care, who's doing the care, in the United States, we still are very tied to those traditional gender roles, because women still are the ones that have maternity leave, if they get any leave at all. But in the countries where they've made that norm for men and women to take leave, 3 years later, what you see is men and women equally sharing child care, which is really an enormous sea change. So you've got more women more opportunity at work, and more men with opportunity to caregive and really be part of that child's life. Because another piece of research that's really important, particularly for young fathers who polls are showing really want to be involved caregivers, that men who take parental leave are much more involved in their children's lives, not just early on, but over the entire course of their child's life.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Laura joining us first in Wisconsin Rapids. Laura, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, when I had my daughter 28 years ago, I worked in a paper mill, and she was 12 weeks early, so she was premature. I got 6 weeks off for maternity leave initially, but when I went back to work, she was still in the hospital. Mm. And in order to get off of work, when we finally got to bring her home at 8 weeks, so I'd been back at work for 2 weeks, and then we were able to bring her home, I had to use up my vacation, and I had to take personal time without pay.
So, Laura, that's a story that obviously has stayed with you. You remember it very well. What would you like to see changed? What would have helped you, do you think, looking back to that time in your life?
Well, it would have really helped if they would have allowed me to take more time off with pay, like maternity leave, in addition to the time off I had to physically recover, then to have time off with my daughter when we finally got to bring her home. She was premature, so she was still having apnea spells. She wasn't on a breathing monitor, but it was still a very scary situation, because she was 5 pounds, 11 ounces when we brought her home.
Wow.
And she was, it was just really scary having to go back to work when I had to go back to work.
Laura, thank you so much for sharing that. And Bridget, what have you learned about how the different options for family leave around the world might apply or help someone like Laura?
Yeah, unfortunately, Laura, your situation is not all that unusual, and it's tragic. Those early weeks and months are critical for bonding, for women to recover if they've had childbirth, for bonding if you've had, whether you've given birth or adopted or had a foster child. They're really important times for creating that sense of family, to find your new rhythms. It's really important for child development, for family stability and health. And yet, situations like Laura's are not that unusual. I've talked to a number of women who, if they have difficulties with their pregnancy, say they need to go on bed rest, then they use up all their 12 weeks of unpaid leave before they have their child. They have their child, and then they have to make the decision, do I go back to work right away or do I quit my job? And sometimes that will push them off into poverty. You know, these are just options that in that critical moment, your family shouldn't have to face. You know, we are a wealthy country. We, how much we spend on these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, what we're talking about is family leave that, the systems in California and other state systems, we're talking about pennies on the dollar that come out of employee paychecks that go into a pooled disability insurance fund. You know, so we're not talking about massive amounts of money or tax dollars. We're talking about pennies on the dollar to be able to support families in situations like this. You know, but for instance, the Department of Labor did a survey recently, and they found that 1 in 4 new mothers in the United States returns to work within 2 weeks of giving birth. Now, you know, I've had 2 kids, and I can tell you that, after 2 weeks after, my were C-sections, I was in no condition. I couldn't even stand. You know, that's really inhuman.
And, Bridget, as we start wrapping up, who pays for family leave? You mentioned some plans where the employee contributes a little bit. I know other countries do it differently, but what seems to be the ideal version of the cost, who bears the cost burden for paid family leave?
Right. Well, in studies done around the world, different countries do it differently. Some have businesses pay for it. Some have the government pay for it. Some have some kind of combination. But what most people are talking about when we look at the United States system is some form of social insurance, like Social Security. So you're talking about sort of pennies that would come out of your paycheck that would go into some kind of pooled fund that then you could seek reimbursement for when you go on leave to care for your parent or your sick relative or when you have a new child. So those are sort of a bill in Congress called the Family Act, and that's what they would envision as basically piggybacking on the already existing Social Security system and then having that come out of employee paychecks. Social Security is employee and employer, but I think it's really important to note in the 4 state programs, no employer is paying anything. This is all employee worker money paying for these paid leaves.
Bridget, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, as Bridget Schulte, director of the Better Life Lab at New America, author of the book Overwhelmed, we are talking there about the prospect of paid family leave in America. You can still chime in on that over on the Central Time Facebook page.